and welcome to the Where People Meet podcast, the event technology podcast for the worldwide meetings and events industry. I'm your host, Mitch Malinsky, head of strategic partnerships here at Feedloop in our brand new office. Really excited for our first recording here. And today I'm joined by Lindsay Carroll, head of marketing and events at Robinhood in New York City. As New York's largest poverty-fighting organization, Robinhood finds, funds, and creates more than 200 of the most effective and innovative programs to help low-income New Yorkers overcome poverty's grip. Part of their poverty-fighting strategy is raising awareness and funds through an impressive portfolio of events, which is where Lindsay spends the majority of her time. Lindsay, thanks for joining us today. I'm really excited for this.
Hi, Mitch. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So, Lindsay, if you don't mind, can we start with you telling everyone a bit about yourself and your background in the meetings and events industry?
My first job out of college was at the college I went to in DC, and I was the assistant to the athletic director, had a variety of different responsibilities, but that was my first exposure to fundraising and events. And I fell in love with it and the idea behind motivating people and connecting them to a cause. And so that was really my foray into events. I was lucky enough to meet an alum who worked at Robinhood. Mm-hmm. So I came up to New York and was very green. I think about a week after I started at Robinhood, we had a large scale concert. So I was really thrown into it, but similarly was kind of taken into this new universe of events, especially in New York City. And I've been at Robinhood for about 14 years.
That's incredible. Let's drill down into that. What does Robinhood do, and how do events fit into your organization's goal of combating poverty and advancing social good?
Events at Robinhood are a critical piece of our fundraising endeavors. Depending on the year, we raise sometimes upwards of 60% of our annual revenue through events.
Wow.
So there's pressure and urgency to do that through our events and offer really memorable experiences to our guests so that they know what Robinhood is up to, and so they come back, and so that they're entertained. So we try to innovate. We try to motivate people to remain in touch, and so we can retain them as donors and kind of take them along our journey as we evolve in kind of our thinking around our mission and what we're trying to do in New York City.
Yeah, and it's a very important mission. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity to learn more about what your organization does and how events fit into that. I know fundraising at these events is a big piece. For those who are fairly new to this world of using events to raise awareness and funds, how are you generating the revenue at these events? Is it based on people buying tickets? Is it based on donations, silent auctions, a variety of different sources? Can you help us to understand where that money's actually coming from?
Depends on the event. Mm-hmm. I'd say for our big premier benefit, we do all of the above, kind of aside from silent auctions. We generate a lot of revenue through ticket and table sales. Mm-hmm. We do an ask or multiple asks in the room that night for donations. This past year in 2022, we brought back one live auction piece, and that was auctioning a ride to space. Ooh. We hadn't done that in many, many years.
Wow.
So I think the last time we'd done that was maybe 2007. Robinhood had this wonderful tradition of building these auction packages that were once-in-a-lifetime experiences. And, when the economy tanked, when for a variety of different reasons, we hadn't done it. And so mm-hmm. we decided to dabble with it. And we decided that our reentry with a live auction to space was the way to do it. So we really went big there, obviously, with the partnership and generosity of a lot of people to make it happen. So I would say for that big event, we have a variety of different sources that allow us to make the event revenue generating. But it's a great question, and it's a good question that we ask ourselves as we start planning some of our events that aren't necessarily revenue generating either, but are have very important follow-up strategies, mm-hmm. so that we, you know, even if it's deemed the fundraising world, like as a stewardship event, we know that we have XYZ steps post-event to retain those donors and to kind of, you know, translate that good experience into a future gift. So I'd say it's always top of mind, and we just try to apply some discipline around what our goal is from a fundraising perspective and how we're going to get there before we even start the planning process of some of these events.
Right. And it obviously seems maximizing funds raised, that's part of the mission, but communicating, spreading awareness, that also seems to be another really important centerpiece of the events that your team puts on.
Exactly. It's the one piece that we try to always communicate, because we know that while we have a lot of loyal donors who attend the majority of our events, we always have new folks in the room. And yep. So it's important for us to be able to communicate our 100% model, which is very unique and is a good selling point to a lot of donors. And that is that 100% of what they give goes out the door directly, because our board of directors and leadership council underwrite all of our operating and overhead costs.
Amazing. So
that point, while it is just kind of the way that Robinhood was founded, is important for us to always convey, even if people have heard it 100 times, knowing that someone new in the audience, that could mean something to them. And the same thing goes with our mission. And it's, you know, there's a lot of nuance to the work that we do, mm-hmm. and that our program team does in terms of making grants and just kind of applying the rigor to the grant making process that we do. So we try to boil it down. We try to communicate stories and really emphasize the storytelling aspect of it, knowing that that's an entry point for a lot of people into some of the like tangible issues that we're trying to address in New York City. So it's like definitely a balance of, you know, of the storytelling, but then also the metrics and
right.
the meat behind what we're really doing.
Makes sense. And I know you and I were speaking beforehand. You mentioned your team does a lot of events. You've got over 100 events you do throughout the year. It's only a team of 4, so I'm not sure how you do it. You probably have your hands full a lot of the time. But I know one of your most notable events, and for you, one of your most notable personal achievements, was leading the return of your annual Robinhood benefit to an in-person format in 2021. And it's just mind-boggling, the metrics. I was looking it up online. You raised over $77 million, featured talent like Bruce Springsteen, Paul McCartney, Alicia Keys, and you were actually named the top benefit in 2021 by BizBash. So while, of course, the end product of this event was an incredible success, I'm sure it was a very difficult process for you and your team to pull off. So if you wouldn't mind, can you highlight the challenges your team faced in transitioning such a large fundraising event back on site? And if you had any lessons learned or tips that our audience should keep in mind for their transition back to in-person events, that would be really wonderful.
It was certainly a notable memory that will stick with me, and I think a lot of us, for the rest of our lives, that we kind of knew as it was happening, but looking back and having a little bit of space, realized that even more so.
Yep.
There was so much forecasting that went on, and I think we reached a point where we were eager to start planning the event, but we hadn't gotten the green light from all of our stakeholders to move forward. We wanted to be very careful and wanted to make sure that we had the buy-in of some of our top donors so that we know people would attend the event. Obviously, our board of directors and leadership council members, leadership at Robinhood. There were there's a lot of input, but it allowed us to really take a close look at kind of everything that we were doing. So it felt like we were you know, took everything out of the car and reevaluated all the pieces and all the parts and tried to find a new way to put it back together again. Because by the time we made the decision to move forward, you know, we were up against the clock and we were dealing with, you know, labor shortage. We were dealing with supply chain issues, like a lot of large scale events. Mm-hmm. There, we were in a brand new space at the Javits Center. And because of our scale, there is a real undertaking for our engineers to be able to kind of redesign the room, figure out capacity, then figure out decor. Of course, the health and safety of our guests was highly important to us, and also how we communicate that. Because we were in October 2021, we were kind of nestled between somewhat of a hiatus when it comes to COVID in New York City. It was right before a variant hit and right after the summer. So we were very lucky timing-wise. The one thing that was somewhat of a guiding light for us was that the benefit date that was offered to us at the Javits Center was the 20th anniversary of Robin Hood's historic concert at Madison Square Garden after 9/11.
Wow.
So we just felt like we got to do it. We got to do this safely. We hope that people show up. And the takeaway for me was that so many different people came together to make this happen. And you kind of look back at the years of these entities sort of negotiating and finding our way together. You know, ultimately we would get there, but there was certainly a renewed spirit of partnership among everyone that we just really leaned into and that made it possible. So it was thousands of people that were able to help us execute this event. And my piece of advice would be kind of what I was saying earlier, is that it allowed us to rethink and reevaluate the way in which we did things that mm-hmm. we sort of took for granted in the past. So there were some robotic things that we would just do because we did every year. And this allowed us to really take a critical eye towards a lot of our operations so that, you know, because we were really focused on the guest experience. We wanted them to welcome them back safely. We wanted to welcome them back with entertainment and fun and kind of all the things. And so that focus on guest experience really allowed us to try some new things and just like tweak some old things. So that would be my kind of piece of advice there.
That's a fantastic piece of advice. So thank you for sharing that. But that was the 2021 event. And again, that was $77 million raised. 2022 yeah. was even more ridiculous. I think you raised a whopping $126 million to help fight poverty in New York. So for an event of this scale, I should say, what goes on behind the scenes? Can you shed some light on that? Because I'm personally very curious. I know people in the audience will want to hear. Would love to learn more about that.
We are so lucky to have some vendor partners who have been around for a really long time and are kind of our like right and left hand folks. So they help us navigate a lot of these changes. Our production company, our decor company, you know, we're certainly not doing a lot of this alone especially when it comes to the creative direction and the vision and then the operations with our production team. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, the thing with the 2022 benefit is we typically have a year in between benefits. We do it every May in New York City. And we obviously had around a 6-month turnaround from October 2021 to May 2022. So that proved to be challenging, but also a real opportunity for us to be able to implement some of the changes that we saw as, you know, an opportunity to do so after our 2021 event. So as we look at our feedback and we kind of look at ourselves in the mirror and think, how can we improve this? We have an opportunity to do that way sooner than we normally would. And so we really tried to tackle that. So that was one thing that behind the scenes, I think we all applied that mindset to all of our vendors. Just how can we get better? Because a year is a long time. You forget a lot of things. So we tried to lean into that. The other thing we did from a guest experience perspective is especially in the room and with the program, is that we try to create a complementary program to what people experienced in October. So again, another opportunity for us to like build unique moments for people to tell, to really refine the Robin Hood messaging. We always try to evaluate what audience, who's in the audience, and how can we tailor some of our messaging, and it's usually across the board. So again, like it's donors who've been around at every single benefit for three decades, and those who are brand new. So that exercise, guest experience wise and sort of messaging, allowed us to tell a story that we felt was somewhat complete, you know, in May, but also like October and May, I think gave a comprehensive experience for people.
Right. And it seems there's a few keys to your success. It seems there's I think you're the definition of, hey, it takes a village to pull it off. You've got your team, the key team within Robinhood, but then you've got all your fantastic vendors and partners who help with everything from design, production, marketing, all of that great stuff. But the really important piece that I want to highlight is, it seems you give yourselves the time to decompress from the previous year's event and then to start ramping up and gearing up for next year. So I think that's something to note for our audience, is be sure you've got a long enough event planning horizon. Sometimes we see people come to us and they're like, hey, Mitch, we've got an event coming up in the next 3 weeks. We need to hit the ground running. And I'm just like, oh. So be sure to give yourselves enough time. And I really like how your team, instead of taking a vacation after the event and going and relaxing, you actually sit down while it's all fresh and decompress on, this is what went well, this is what could have used improvement, and these are the new initiatives we want to implement for next year. So take note, everyone.
You're so right. Time is the ultimate commodity. There's so much value in time, and it's something I think a lot of us know, but we forget. So when we have that opportunity to use it wisely, it just proves hugely, hugely valuable.
Absolutely. Now, taking this conversation in another direction, I want to see how we can apply your lessons and your skills to the majority of event planners who aren't necessarily running socially driven events. Like, the majority of event planners are doing annual conferences for an association or a trade show or a career fair or things along those lines. But I think a lot of them are looking to become more socially responsible. So, Lindsay, if you wouldn't mind, for the typical event planner who's running an annual conference or a trade show where the main goal isn't socially driven, what can they do to advance social good and make that part of their overall event strategy?
If there's a local tie-in, obviously for us, because we're a New York City focused organization, but even in other parts of the country, wherever you're hosting, is there an angle that you can lean into that is local? So it may not be a natural tie-in, but the proximity of where the event is could be enough to build some sort of partnership with a local organization. I'd say partnership also with brands who or organizations who kind of do this sort of thing or may have a philanthropic component to their work. Mm-hmm. I think one example for us is that, not necessarily applicable, but I think the spirit of it is we partnered with Bombas Socks. There's certainly a lot of overlap at our benefit. But they brought a whole new dimension to the work that they do, and they are experts at what they do and sort of the way they market their initiatives. And so it was very much a complement to what we did. And so I think there are some natural partnerships that may exist between an event or a trade show based on like a very simple metric of mm-hmm. proximity or, you know, something. One other example for us is that we, and this was really driven by our production company, but we had sustainability sort of component to our benefit this year. It was something that they introduced because we're so large scale. There's a lot of materials, a lot of labor. It felt like the responsible thing for us to do to be able to track what our output is, given, you know, our presence in New York City. And so we use this as our kind of, you know, kickoff year, and we're going to see what we're going to do with that information. But we're not an environmental charity. We don't do any of that work. So it was a little bit of a departure for us. It was something that was just going on the side, but just kind of showed that there are kind of opportunities everywhere. And I, you know, we did communicate that to some of our guests too, who care about those issues very, you know, are very close to their heart. So I would say, tackle one issue, see what might make sense, and kind of thread that throughout your event, however you can.
Yeah, and seek out partners. I like that. But it seems the topic of sustainability, that probably is fairly low-hanging fruit that most events can look at. Because while I love this industry, events are just so wasteful. The amount of food, the amount of carpeting, trade show materials that just get tossed out at the end of the event. It's sad to see, but I think if the event planner just starts with there and partners with a local organization where they donate excess food and furniture at the end of the event, then that's a really simple first step and something that will do a lot of good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a feel good thing, and it's a responsible thing. It's a real journey too. I think a lot of events, you know, will be surprised at some of the things they may already be doing too, to you know, help with that sustainability.
Absolutely. So every year, it seems, especially with the Robin Hood benefit, it seems you're able to one up yourself every time and just take the event to another ridiculously high performing level. So for 2023, May 2023, what are your aspirations? What are your goals for the next Robin Hood benefit, Lindsay?
Oh, it's a perpetual challenge, I will say. I would say one thing that has, you know, shines through is how do we create moments or even a moment that could only happen at a Robin Hood benefit. And that's usually the intersection of music, a musician, a choir from a community partner or a school that Robin Hood supports. Some sort of natural but like very powerful moment that is both entertaining and informative. So I would say that sort of guiding principle exists for us in the May benefit in 2023 is how do we create that? And there are a lot of misses, I think, leading up to it. So again, time is on our side as far as brainstorming ideas, figuring out the right talent and the right scenario in which we can execute this in a way that's thoughtful and meaningful. So that's one thing. And then I would say, I think, it's sort of the zooming in and zooming out again of the messaging. Yep. How do we continue to tell our story, and how do we continue to convey the urgency? The pandemic in New York City was an urgent matter, and Robin Hood has historically responded to natural disasters like Hurricane Sandy and then, of course, 9/11. But the urgency remains there for the New Yorkers who rely on our community partners and on Robin Hood. And that is a real focal point for us in conveying that to the audience, knowing that we'll likely be, you know, kind of past the tough part of the pandemic and people are relaxing, and we just need to make sure that it's known that our work needs to continue, and it's fueled by the generosity of so many people. So I would say those two things are certainly at like the forefront of our planning for the benefit in 2023.
Well, I'm excited to follow along with the journey. It's sure to be another outstanding event. But Lindsay, I know we've taken up a lot of your time today, so I just want to wrap things up with the last round of questions here. For the audience, people, again, who are running typical events, who just Any tips and tricks that they should keep in mind for their event portfolio going forward, either in terms of how to make it more philanthropic or socially just, or just from you and your personal experience in pulling off large, complex events? Are there any tips and tricks that you'd like to instill with the audience today?
Well, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but there's, because of the pandemic, it's allowed us to take a new kind of opportunity to look at the things that we did robotically, or we just did year after year.
Yep.
And so I think the actionable item there is just applying, some intention to everything you do. And we have started to do that. I mean, larger scale, it gets a little bit difficult, but like that principle, we try to apply to a variety of different events. So small, like kind of everything we do, whatever goes in our gift bag, every item, what's the purpose? Our tablecloths in the dining room are, you know, centerpieces, the costumes for the dancers, all of those things move so quickly. It's difficult to, sort of find that time to make sure that it all fits into the larger story. And mm-hmm. sometimes the intention there is just like something that looks cool and beautiful and that's it. And I think that's fine too. It's just making sure that we're not just frivolous in the way that we kind of erect this event or any event. So that's my actionable item. I think it applies to the operations too, how you do check-in, what system you use, always striving for some sort of efficiency. Because I think as you take a closer look and you have that time to evaluate, you can usually find some more efficient way, effective way to execute whatever the operational thing is in front of you. Absolutely. So intention is kind of the theme.
Good. I love that. Well, Lindsay, I really enjoyed this conversation. You're a very impressive person. You pull off some incredible events and you're advancing an incredibly important mission. So thank you for what you do. Thank you to Robinhood for what your organization does. It's very inspiring. And thank you for taking the time to join us today. But for those in the audience who may want to learn more about you and your journey or Robinhood, where can they go to find out more?
About Robinhood, I find that LinkedIn is a great platform for us to share our work. So I would say follow Robinhood on LinkedIn. Okay. And then I'm on all the socials. So Instagram and LinkedIn is good for me. And I look forward to connecting.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll dig that up. We'll share that along with the blog post that goes out with this. But again, Lindsay, thank you so much. For everyone listening, that wraps up our Where People Meet podcast episode on how to make giving back a centerpiece of your organization's event strategy with Lindsay Carroll. Thanks for your time today, and we'll see you next time on the Where People Meet podcast.